Okay, today is Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas is a Yom Tainis. Today we're really supposed to fast. Tainis is in commemoration of what is called the Sreifas HaTalmud. Okay, I didn't prepare to look over all the details, but... No, not the Rambam. I'll explain. No. What happened in the year 1241? Is that correct? I think it was the year 1241. After a vikuach, after what's the English word for vikuach? A disquisition between the Rabbi Yechiel mi Paris, Rabbi Yechiel from Paris, France. This took place in France against a person by the name of Nicholas Donin. Who is Nicholas Donin? He was once a Haredi. He was a Haredi who became Meshum Napi Kores. He was insulted, he had ideas, and they pushed him away, and unfortunately, one thing led to another, he became a virulent anti-Jewish individual, and he did everything he can possibly do to undermine the Kehila to Klal Yisrael. And one of the things that he did was he took advantage of his knowledge of the Talmud, and he spoke to the government, the king, and to the Pope, and one thing led to another, and he tried to convince them that the Jews are rebelling against the Christians, against the church, against the state, and one thing led to another where they confiscated the Talmud, they confiscated all books. Now we have to also remember that this was the year 1241, before the invention of the printing press, by approximately 400 or 500 years, two to three hundred years, and it was very valuable item to have in your possession, or even for a kehilah to have a manuscript of the Talmud Bavli, or even of a Chumash, or of anything for that matter. And all of the Sifrei Kodesh were confiscated pending the outcome of the determination of the church if the words of the Talmud, of the Torah, are against the belief, the belief of the church. Okay, it's a very long story. There's a lot of different limudim to learn from this. And one thing led to another, and eventually there was a committee put together headed by Rabbi Yechiel, the Gadol Hadar. He was eloquent. He knew how to respond to these apikorsim. He had a team of individuals, very holy people, and they debated in front of the king, in front of the different leaders of the church. And of course, even though he won, it was clear as day that he won, that he proved without a shadow of a doubt that the Torah is MS, and the Torah has no intent to cause any harm, any trouble for the Christians. Yet, the anti-Semitism of the church and of the people of France, it was their decision that they would anyway destroy the Talmud. So on Erev Shabbos, that year it was Tammuz. I don't know the exact, someone told me that it could very well be that it's like this year as well. It was Tes Tammuz, maybe whatever it was. That year it was Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. They went searching in France for Sifrei Kodesh from house to house. They put together 24 wagons, 24 carts of Sifrei Kodesh. They brought it to the town square, which is still in existence today. The exact location where it was burned can still be seen today. And they brought it there and they made a spectacle where they destroyed, they burnt these very holy, valuable Sephardim. It was a tragedy beyond our imagination. And for this, they will goyzer every year that Klal Yisrael should fast on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas to commemorate the tragedy of this, and most of the Sfarim that were burned were Torah Shebal Peh. This was unique. This is a watershed moment in Klal Yisrael, is where the challenge was to Torah Shebal Peh. And these 24 cartloads of Talmud and their commentators were destroyed. The commentaries of the Talmud were destroyed in this fire. Period. Now, at that point in time, there were some very holy people. They wanted to understand if this was, and I don't understand what this means. I'll just tell you what it says in the Sfarim, is that was this something that was just a coincidence, or was this something that was done very deliberately by Hashem to wake us up? There are different levels, obviously. Rachmana litzlan, when there are tragedies, when there are issues, when there are events, there are different levels of tragedy. there are things which are natural to a certain degree, whatever that means, and everything is bashkoch. Let's not make any mistake about that. Everything is bashkoch pratis. Anything otherwise than that is apikorsis. Everything is bashkoch biyad Hashem. But there are different degrees in what Hashem is trying to do when Rachmana Litzlan there is a tragedy. There's an earthquake. There's a hurricane. So does that mean that something new or it was meant to be mimaisa bereishis? There are different levels. So they made a request that they should get an answer in a dream. I don't know what this means. A she'elas chalom, and the response was the first words of this parasha, the targum of the second pasuk of this parasha, da gezeras oiraisa. This is what came from heaven into the mind of one of the talmidei chacham of the generation, that what has happened on erev Shabbos, parashas chukas, the sreifas haTalmud in France. This was a gezeira. The word of the Targum is a very harsh word. It's not the word we would expect to say, Zos chukas ha-Torah. Chukas means the law. The law, the Targum does not usually translate the word chukah with the word gezeiras. The word gezeiras means a decree which has a very bad connotation, which means this is a punishment. This is a very severe wake-up call to the Jews living in Golus. You're in trouble, you have a problem, you have to do tshuva, there is an issue over here. Da gezeras oiraisa. And that led people to look into themselves, to do introspection, and they recognized that not that long ago, there was a very ugly debate between the Jews living in France and Germany and the Jews living in Spain. The Jews living in Spain were under the influence of the Rambam, and they had an appreciation for philosophy. And they studied the Rambam's Moira Nevuchim, and they studied the Rambam's Sefer Hamada, where the Rambam discusses philosophical ideas about the purpose of creation, the purpose of this world, what our role is. That was the Spanish Jews. The Jews who lived in France and Germany did not like this approach. They were misnagate to this rational approach to understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his world and the way things work. They believed more in an approach of tmimos. You don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. Do not delve into these matters. It's not appropriate. This disagreement between the Jews of France and Germany over versus the Jews of Spain got very, very ugly. It got way out of hand. It may have started as a respectable disagreement, but the Kanoim, the Dosan Va'avidim of the people took it way out of hand. And what happened? They collected in France the works of the Rambam, the Moreh Nevuchim, and Sefer Hamada, and they did a public book burning. Jews themselves burnt on the same exact spot where France, the government, destroyed after the Vikuach. They burnt the 24 wagons of Sifrei Kodesh. It was on that very, very spot years ago where the Jews of France, they collected the books of the Rambam, the Moreh Nevuchim, and Sefer Hamada and other things, and they had a public book burning. And the ashes were still there. And the ashes of the 24 cartloads of Talmud and its Mefarshim mingled. What?
The
Rambam, years ago. So and the ashes were still there on that spot, and the ashes of the Sfarim now were mingling with the ashes of the Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim. They took this as a sign that they better do teshuvah, that this was a very great sin in burning the Sifrei Rambam. This is a terrible, terrible thing, a terrible disrespect for the Rambam, just because you have a different approach in your hashkafa. In the way you avoid this Hashem, it does not give you the right to go to an extreme to be mevaze talmidei chachamim and to do something disgusting like this, to publicly get up in front of the world and go and take an approach that so many other Jews of the world hold from and publicly do this. And this is very relevant in today's society, Rabbi Yisai. Hameven Yavin. There are things that people do that are just shocking. You can do what you want to do. Everyone, different strokes for different folks. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chai, 100%. But there are limits. There are definitely boundaries in how far you go. How much sinas chinam? How much in someone's face do you want to provoke them? And it's just shocking In kol ve'ein oiner. Quiet. Everything is quiet. There's no protest. I don't know what to say. I'm probably I'm looking to get into trouble. But I really, for the life of me, do not understand things that are going on. And no one says a word. Everything is fine and good. Look at history. Look at Erev Shabbos Parashas Chukas. Erev Shabbos is terrible tragedy. Do gizeras oiraisa. The very least is in our own personal life. We don't know. The average person like me has no influence, but the little things that you have in life with other people, stand down, have respect. Different strokes for different folks. Eilu ve'eilu, divrei Elokim chayim, have respect. You do your thing, I do my thing. V'zehu, there has to be a delicate. I'm not giving any chas v'shalom for me to say one more word. Done. Hamei, done. You have to go. You have to. It's everything. In every little aspect of life, there are many, many examples. Many examples. What I'm thinking, it doesn't make a difference. It's a very powerful limud musar. Every day, once a year, Erev Shabbos Parashas Chukas is a Yom Tainus. It's a day to reflect. What is the message? The message is have respect for someone else's derech in life. Not everyone. Everyone is different. Hashem made different types of people. The same way no two people look alike, no two people think alike. Everyone has their unique approach to serving Hashem. And as long as it fits in the framework of Shulchan Aruch, then it's lit, and you have a tradition, and you have Gidoyle Yisrael who have followed a certain mahalach. You are mechuyev to have respect, not to chas v'shalom go to the degree. There's the whole sefer Shari Tshuva was written as a teshuva for such an approach. The one who wrote Shari Tshuva, what was his name? Who wrote Shari Tshuva? The famous Muslim. He was one of the participants who burnt the Sifrei Rambam. And after what? Rabbeinu Yonah, he was the one who participated in burning. Can you imagine? He actually participated in burning the Sifrei Rambam, and he went on.
I think he was part of the debate, but he was upset when they burned it.
And he did a lot more than that. He did Shuvah. The Sefer Shari Shuvah was his teshuvah for being misnaged against the Rambam. When he saw what happened, he saw the terrible thing that happened, the Shrevas HaTalmud, and he saw it was the Yad Hashem, Do Gezeras Oiraisa. Hashem wants people to be tolerant of other Jews who have other approaches to Yadus. When he saw the terrible tragedy, he did Tshuva.
Which came first, the Rambam?
The Rambam came much earlier. The Rambam was much earlier. The Rambam was many years earlier. That was the whole problem. That the Shreifas HaTalmud was understood by the Gedolei Yisrael as a punishment for the burning of the Rambam. Who burnt the Rambam's books? Jews. Jews burnt the Rambam's Sfarim. The Spanish Jews were modern. They were very different. They had a very different approach to life relative to the French and German Jews. A very different approach in Hashkafa. And it got to a point where it boiled over, and there was such intense disagreement, they took the Rambam's Sfarim and they burnt it. Years later, I don't remember the exact dates, they have it in the art scroll, the McKinnis even have all the dates. Years later, the Shreifas HaTalmud happened on that very spot, and the ashes mingled with each other, and the She'elas Chaloim told them, Do Gezeras Oiraisa, and the Gedolei Yisrael of the time put two and two together, and they interpreted this tragedy as being Hashem's response. How dare you be mevazeh the holy Rambam by burning the Sefer Mor Nevuchim, Sefer Hamada? If you don't, that's not your approach. It's not your approach to life. But doesn't mean you should go to such an extreme to become violent. That's already going over the line. This is how the Gedolei Yisrael, what I'm telling you now, is basic. It's in the footnotes of the art scroll Kinnis. What I'm telling you is like Ramash, the aleph base of the most basic limud that we take. There are a lot of other things that they talk about this, but it's something which unfortunately has become in our day and age very relevant, because there is a lot of different Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael, Kin Yirbu, is the population of every kehila is Baruch Hashem exploding, and everyone has a different approach, and when there's a different approach, there can be some sichsuch. And the nisyonos today are much greater than it was years ago, due to Baruch Hashem, to the incredible shefa of bracha that Hashem has given us. But with bracha comes responsibility to also know how far to go. And this is something which is kedai, at least I think, to focus upon. Now, then the question I want to ask you, going off now to the parasha, I'll ask you two questions, and it all comes together. Let me ask you a couple of questions. I wanted to say an idea and tie all this together.
Still part of this
Torah? Whatever. We'll see how it goes. Rashi here says, Zoy Tzchikas HaTorah. Then it says, V'yikhu Eilecha. Rav Pasek says, V'yikhu Eilecha, you shall take for yourself a forah aduma timima. Rashi says something very, very bizarre. Rashi's words are, L'oilam hi nikreis al shimcha. Para she'asa Moshe. The fact that it says, V'yikhu Eilecha, para aduma will always be called Moshe Rabbeinu's para aduma. What does that mean? And all of the other Tayag mitzvahs are not. All the Tayag mitzvahs are Torah's Moshe. Why all of a sudden are we singling out Para Aduma to be called, this will be yours, Moshe? You'll tell me, because Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who understood what Para Aduma was all about. Even Shlomo HaMelech says, V'hi rechoyka mimeni. Okay, that's a very simple answer. Moshe understood the time of the mitzvah. That's why it's accredited to Moshe, but no one else could understand the depth of what this mitzvah is all about. Okay, that's one approach. But still, the question still is a good question. What is it all about? Second question is, why was it that the Sreifa Satalma, the tragedy, the sorrow, the churban of the Sreifa Satalma took place against the backdrop of Parshas Chukas, where we should be reminded on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas, when we're just about ready to read the Parsha Para Aduma, there should be this wake-up call that we should do teshuva, and there should be a response, a She'elas Chaloyim, Do Gezeras Eraisa. What does the Sreifas HaTalmud have to do with Para Aduma? What is this all about? So now there's another question which I think I forgot. One second. Okay, another question. Why does it say here Zois Chukas HaTorah? This is a question some of the commentators ask. It should really say Zois Chukas HaParah. Why does the Torah use the word Zois? This is the law of HaTorah. And in fact, later in this parasha it says Zois HaTorah Adam Kiyamus Ba'oihel, which Chazal Darshan, Ein Adam Koine Torah Ela Imkein Meimis Atzmai Olecha. There are many psukim in the Torah that we could have used to bring out the point that a person is only going to be succeed in becoming a Talmud Chacham only through Amelos, only through Yegiyah, through effort, through hard work. Why over here does it say, why specifically here in this parish does it say Zoyis Chukas HaTorah? It's only in Paraduma where we bring out the point that Ein Adam Koinator Elim Kein Meimis Atzmai Olecha. So I think the answer to all of these questions is hidden in another Rashi. It's a very interesting Rashi. Rashi over here in Pasuk Tes tells us, he's in the Pasuk, what do you do after you finish burning the ash of the Paraduma? Moshe Rabbeinu over here is burning the first Paraduma. Chazal tells that we know that in history there were how many Paradumas in total? Nine. Nine so far. There's going to be one more when Mashiach comes. So the question over here is, it was very rare. It was not easy to make a part, to find a Para Aduma. In Pasuk Tes, Rashi tells us, after being dyke in the Pasuk, V'yiniach michutz l'machaneh, l'shloyshe chaloka mischalim. When a Para Aduma, a new Para Aduma is prepared, the ashes are divided into three parts and put in three different locations. And this is all derived from the psukim. We're not going to go now into the details. One location, Echad Nosan Bachar HaMishcha. The first one was put on Har HaZesim. We'll see one in a moment why. The Echad. A second third of the Parad Esh was put Mischalik L'chol HaMishmarais, was given to the Kohanim. There are 24 Mishmaris of Kohanim, and there was a central location where they would all come and receive the Tziv Esh to purify themselves from Tumas Meis when they would come to the Beis HaMikdash. The Echad, Nosan Bechel, was put on the Har HaBayis. When an individual came off the plane from El Al, they come there to the Beis HaMikdash. So before you come into the Beis, we have to ask, are you Tahar? You don't know, so you know what? Let's go. Let's just to be sure, we'll put some ash. We'll do the process. Day 3, day 7, we're going to the Paraduma. Three different locations was where the ash of the Paraduma was stored. Rashi goes further. Zed, one, Shel Mishmaros, Hayachutz, Le'azara, Little Men, B'nehai, Ayaros, V'chol Hatshichen, Le'itoher. The one that was given to the 24 Mishmaros of Kehanim was given to the Kehanim and the common man. The common man used the ash that was in the possession of the Mishmaros of Kehanim. V'zeh, and let me just skip one line. V'zeh Shebechel, Nasun Le'mishmeres, Migzeres HaKosuf. There was one portion that was put in the Beis HaMikdash for a Mishmeres, to guard. I don't understand what this is for, but it's not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on the second third of Ash. V'zeh shebahar ha-mishcha, koyhanim gidoylim, leporois acherois mikachin heimena. This is an amazing, insightful line of Rashi. The Ash of Moshe Rabbeinu's Paraduma, and for that matter, the Ash of the next eight as well, was divided into three parts. One part, one third, I don't know if it was divided equally, but one part of the Paraduma was put on Har HaZesim in preparation to be used by the Kohanim who will prepare the next Paraduma. To be Metarde. Because the halacha is when you burn, when you prepare, we know the whole story with the children, that they live in special cities built upon stone, built upon arches. When the people who would prepare the Paraduma, who would, the Elozer HaKoyen, the Skan Kohen Gadol, and the Kohanim who would slaughter and would burn and would mix, the people that were in charge of preparing the next Paraduma would have to be 100% pure. Which means they had to go through a process of tahara in advance. Where did they derive the ash for their personal tahara in order to prepare for the next paraduma? From the ash of the previous paraduma. In other words, each paraduma, each subsequent paraduma is directly linked to the previous paraduma. It's not the pshat. Okay, we're going to have in history of the world, until the time of Mashiach, 10 paradumas. So there are 10 paradumas. The person who's going to prepare the paraduma, he has to be tar. All right, so he has to be tar. So where is he going to get ash? Whatever, he'll find the ash somewhere. He'll find the ash from the previous, the one before, or maybe he'll get lucky. He was never in his whole life tamei. Maybe in his entire life he never came in contact with the dead, so he does not need to purify himself in order to be the one designated to prepare the next paraduma. Rashi tells us that's not the case, based upon a deek in the pasuk. The kohanim that were assigned to prepare the next paraduma from Klal Yisrael must be purified with the ash of the previous paraduma. Each paraduma in Jewish history was built upon a foundation of the previous. It's a link. It's not an independent karba, not an independent para. Therefore, we now can appreciate what Rashi says, the yikhu elecha paraduma. Moshe! You're the first. You are the first paraduma. The ash of your paraduma is going to be put in safekeeping for the second paraduma. Because the people who are going to make the second paraduma will be required to purify themselves from your ash. They can't go skip steps. Maybe you'll say, no, there are many techniques. Maybe you'll say that they never were tamei, like the children, right? They were never tamei their whole life. They don't even need to purify themselves. Or maybe, you know what? They'll find a little paraduma. You can think of different examples. I'll leave with that example. There are other techniques. They're more complicated. But Moshe, let's just say they were never tamei their whole life. No. the people who are going to be involved in preparing the next Parah Aduma have to be purified with the ash of your Parah Aduma. Thus,
so what do we do with Lishia?
So obviously that means it has to be somewhere stored away. There has to still be ash from the ninth stored away in secret in order to purify the people who will prepare the tenth Parah Aduma. Every Parah Aduma is linked back to Moshe Rabbeinu. We can now appreciate the Yikrei Lecha Le'olam. It's he nikreis al shimcha. Parah she'osa Moshe Bamidbar. Every subsequent Parah Aduma can trace themselves back to Moshe Rabbeinu. When you do a mitzvah, I take the dal, I take a lulav v'neshug, right? I'm going to take now the lulav v'neshug. Does the lulav v'neshug that I take have anything to do with Moshe Rabbeinu? Nothing. He gave us the mitzvah. If I take an esrog, does Moshe Rabbeinu have anything to do with this esrog? Nothing. I wear tefillin. Nothing. Moshe gave us the law. He told us what to do, so I do it. I do it. I find parchment and ink, and I make tefillin. But Parah Aduma, it's a cycle. You need to be tahor to make a Parah Aduma. How did you become tahor? The ash from the previous Parah Aduma. The one who made the previous Parah Aduma, where did he become tar? The ash from the previous Parah. V'chulu, v'chulu. Where does it end? It ends with Moshe. L'oilam nikres al shimcha. Now we can also understand why we have the drasha, Zois chukas ha-Torah. This whole parasha all alludes to the kedusha of the Torah itself. Adam zois ha-Torah. Adam ki yomus ba'oyal. Ein Adam koine Torah ela imkei neimis asma aleha. Because what is Torah all about? Torah is all about tracing to halacha l'moshe misinai. Torah, all chidushei Torah has to be rooted in what was given to Moshe at Har Sinai. There's no new Torah. Person cannot come along with mechadesh new Torah. You can't go make new things. You have to trace the Mesorah back to the roots. This is the essence of Torah. And that is why specifically in the parasha of Parah Aduma do we use the word Zois Chukas HaTorah. Do we say Adam Ki Yomus Boyel? This is the bread and butter. This is the DNA of what Torah is all about. To trace your roots to Moshe and Har Sinai. And now we also could understand why when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to punish us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to shake us up by bringing about this horrible, horrific tragedy of the Sreifa Satara of 24 wagons of Talmud Bavli and its Mefarshim. It was Bedafka on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas against the backdrop of the Parah Aduma, because the Sreifa Satalmud was a breach, was a break from the what is the Talmud Bavli? It's all the tracing us back to Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, Torah Misinai. And the strength of the Talmud is telling, Hashem is telling us, you're not going in the way of the Mesorah. Your approach, your behavior, your conduct is not correct. This is not the Torah. And therefore the Torah, Rachman Muslim, was a Sreifa, the Dafka, against the backdrop of Parah Aduma, which is Le'olam Yikra Al Shimcha, because each the lesson and the essence of Parah Aduma is to trace back in a cycle, a link, a chain of Talmidei Chacham going all the way back to its origin of Matan Torah.
What? The fact that you made one sentence, which I thought you were going to include, about the merging of the two.
That's how the Talmidei Chacham of the generation that we're able to understand. See, today you have no one can do something like this today. Today, if anything happens today and someone tells you why, stay away. We know that no one today can tell us why bad things happen. But here we're going back 1241. We're dealing with a different world. 14th century, the tail end of the Rishonim, the Marami Ramberg. Now, the Rabbi Ramberg was a witness. He wrote the famous Kina. We say this on Yom Kippur. We say this on Tisha. We say on Tisha B'Av. He was the witness. We're dealing with people that are beyond us. They were able to connect the dots and understand why things happened, and they taught us the reason why this happened was because of the disrespect we showed the Rambam. The Rambam had ideas that were not popular in his time, but it was acceptable. It was legitimate. It's not for everyone, and there were people that was misnagged, but there was a complaint that we've gone too far. And the way Hashem showed that is that the ashes of the Rambam mingled with the ashes of the Sifrei Talmud. Okay, let's go. We're going to go to a new verse.
We're going to say that
they
grew long in seeing the work of the Rambam as disconnected from Sina.
Okay, that's correct. That's correct. Right. That also, okay, you can interpret this as you may. Okay, this is the raw ideas. Raw ideas, you can interpret it as you may, but I just think the idea, there's something here. I think this Rashi opens up a whole new vista in understanding the significance of Parah Adumah. Where do you have such a thing that every mitzvah we do today is an einikol of a previous mitzvah? The lulavim and esrogim are not. The tefillin are not. Our tzitz are not. Each generation, you know you have a mitzvah. You follow what it says in the Torah. You go, you do the mitzvah. Everything that you do is all built physically, it's all built or spiritually upon on a previous mitzvah. Parah Adumah has a requirement. The Torah is very specific. The people who prepare the Parah Adumah must themselves be tahar. How do they get tahar? There are different techniques of how you can be tahar. The simplest technique is like the Gemara says. You raise children in a secluded area where there's no dead bodies on an island, and they will be the ones who are tahar. They will prepare the Parah Adumah. Torah says, no, don't do that. Don't do that. The people have to become tamei first and then become tahar. And you know how they're going to become tahar? Rashi, they're going to become tahar with the ash of the previous Parah Adumah. When you go into the future, the tahara of the future of Klal Yisrael is built upon the foundation of the tahara of the previous generation. And where did it all start from? Moshe Rabbeinu, the Yikroi Lecha. It's unbelievable. Is it very unique? There's nothing like this. And that's why so many elements of Torah are connected to Parah Adumah, which is unique in having this Mesorah that takes us all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now let's discuss another quick idea. The Parash Rashi, what is unique about Parah Adumah? Parah Adumah is what we call the quintessential Chayk. Shlomo HaMelech acknowledged that he doesn't understand what's behind this mitzvah. It was only Moshe Rabbeinu that was given an insight to understand the depth of this mitzvah. And if, as far as we're concerned, we are totally lost, we acknowledge Zoyz Chukas HaTorah. Rashi explains, the very first Rashi writes, Lefisha HaSotan, the Umos HaOlam, Moinin Es Yisrael Loimar. Now, Rav Chaim, what does it mean, Moinin? What is the translation of the word Moinin? The words of Rashi, Moinin means they count, they come together, they congregate.
It had several meanings. What's the content?
The first Rashi of the parasha, Lefi Shas Satan.
That they mock.
Mock? Moinin means to mock? I thought it means they congregate.
No.
They come together.
No.
Moinin. I don't know. Whatever. We have to look at the art scroll translation. Moinin Es Yisrael Loimar. Mo ha-mitzvah ha-zois u-ma-tam yesh-bo.
It's not friendly.
It's not a good word. Lefichach, therefore, kosav-bo. That's why the pasuk says chuka. What's the word chuka? As the Targum says, gezera hi milifonai. It's my law. Don't ask questions. Ein lecho reshus lehar acharech. You have no permission to have a thought, question, why this mitzvah should be done, and what is the reason behind the mitzvah. Now, let's take this Rashi. I think Rashi over here is teaching us something very, very powerful. This is called the quintessential chag. Now, the truth is, there are many mitzvahs which we don't understand. We don't know, Basa B'chalav, do we really understand Basa B'chalav? I know you look in this Sefarim, they'll give you many, many reasons. But those same Sefarim that tell you the reason for Basa B'chalav, guess what? They also tell you the reason for Parah Adumah. So just like we know, when they tell us the reason for Parah Adumah, we know that it's just a very small, teeny token of what it's all about. We don't really know the full depth. There are many mitzvahs that we really don't understand. Let's be honest. Shadnez, Parah Adumah. I know you'll find midrashim, you'll find different reasons, but when the day is over, we really have very limited understanding of the mitzvahs. All the mitzvahs have an element of a chayk within them. And there are many examples, not for now, to prove that point. So why then, still, after everything is said and done, do we focus on Parah Adumah more than other mitzvahs, which we really don't understand? So I think there's an element here that Rashi is coming to allude to that really shows how Parah Adumah is in a class by itself. Rashi begins with two different groups of people, or two different groups. Lefi shehasatan, number one. Number two, the umay sa'ilam. I think Rashi is alluding to us that some of the mitzvahs, the only one that's trying to prevent us from being mekayim the mitzvah is the satan. The umay sa'ilam have no problem. They have no problem. Tell them about the mitzvah. Kibud avayim. Very nice. They also do it. We understand. Tell them about the mitzvah of chesed. Tell them about many mitzvahs. L'sika ha'ema. They must love that one. L'sika ha'ema labanim. Don't go. Don't take. Don't do animal rights. Don't slaughter the mother and the child on the same day. There are many things that the umayis olam, when they look at the tayag mitzvahs, there are many of things they'll check off. Excellent. We have no complaints. Who then is misnaged? The satan. The satan is listening. Doesn't want. The satan doesn't want us to do the mitzvah. Then there are examples. Now this you have to trust me. There are examples where the satan is happy. You can do the mitzvah. I have no complaint. Better spend your time doing this mitzvah than doing other mitzvahs or doing other things. There are examples, and not for now. There are things. The satan at times has no problem with you doing certain mitzvahs. But the umay sa'olam do have a problem. They have a problem. So there, when you look at the category of mitzvahs, I'm saying an idea, which if you want to challenge me, go right ahead. I want to throw out an idea. In the world, there's two different forces working against us. There is the satan, and there are the umay sa'olam. And there, more often than not, we only have one enemy, and there's a friend. One of the two partners is cheering us on, and the other one is trying their very hardest to prevent us from being mekayim the mitzvah. How often do you have a mitzvah where both partners, the satan and the umay sa'olam, are on the same team, preventing us from being mekayim the mitzvah? Now let me give you what I'm trying to say without examples. What is the paradox of Parah Adumah? This is elementary. The paradox, the most basic paradox of Parah Adumah, is the person who is the recipient of the ash and water of the Parah Adumah becomes tahar. Whereas the person who is applying, the person who is administering the ash and the water of the Parah Adumah becomes tamei. This is a chazal. How could it be? How could it be someone who is tamei becomes tahar, where the person who is bringing about the tahara, he becomes tamei? So now let's break up these two parts. What is the ikar hisnagdus of the satan? The satan is very happy when you become tamei. Think about that. Okay, the satan is thrilled when a person becomes tamei. So when the satan looks at Parah Adumah and he sees that there's a fellow who is tahar. And it's all very abstract concepts. We have to think very abstractly. He's watching this fellow administer Parah Adumah water upon this man who is tamei. This guy is tamei, right? This guy is tamei. This guy is tar. This man is tar. And now, through doing the mitzvah, by doing this mitzvah, this fellow becomes tamei. The satan is clapping. He's cheering, wonderful, wonderful, you're tamei. You're tamei. You brought upon yourself tumah. You're mine. Now you're all mine. I have now shlita over you because you're tamei. The satan is clapping. But when the satan looks at the other fellow, who is the recipient of the Parah Adumah water, and he sees that he has gone from a state of tumah and has been elevated to a tahara, his face turns sour. So in this mitzvah, there are two parts to the mitzvah. Half of the mitzvah, the satan is going crazy, cannot deal with this. He cannot tolerate a ribui of tahara in this world. This cannot deal with that. You cannot deal with that. The Umos HaOlam are very happy when there's Tahara in this world. They really are. Why should they not be? What's it to them? What's it to the Umos HaOlam if the world is a place of Kedusha Tahara? They have their own religion. They have their own religions, and they understand these concepts. They understand these concepts. They engage in concepts of understanding what it means, purity. But what don't they understand? How could it possibly be, Umos HaOlam is all about Seichel, that if I'm a good person, and I'm kind to you, I am Tahar, and I'm now trying to help my fellow men also become Tahar, I have to suffer by me being released, by me administering the Tahar, is administering the Paraduma in order to help a person who is Tamei to elevate him. That person has to suffer and has to become Tamei. Doesn't make any sense. I have no problem with the recipient, with the Tahara, the Ribuy of Tahara. But I have a complaint. I cannot understand why the person who started out Tahar should become Tamei. It's like Tzadik Viraloi. The Satan has no problem with it. The Satan loves that. The Satan loves when it's Raloi, when the Tzadik, when the Tahar becomes Tamei. He can't deal with the Tamei becoming Tahar. But the Umos HaOlam, their problem is just the opposite. They have no problem with the world becoming a place of Tahara, but it's not fair. They don't understand how could it be that someone who starts out being Tahar, when he does a chesed to help another person become Tahar, he becomes Tamei. So this mitzvah, this paradox, is something which draws the worst elements together. It draws together the Satan and the Umos HaOlam, and they're together misnaged against the mitzvah. Do you have other mitzvahs in the Torah where you have this paradox? I don't know, I'm just thinking very, very abstractly, theoretically. No! The reason why this mitzvah, Parah Adumah, is the quintessential choik is, as Rashi starts off by telling us, both partners in crime, both elements of Hisnagdus have partnered here against us. The Satan is against us, and the Umos HaOlam are against us in this mitzvah. Because this mitzvah is Metahar Es HaTameh, and is Metameh Es HaTahar. And each one of those sides is the mission, the life mission of either the Satan of the Umos HaOlam, and it should not be. So this mitzvah brings together the two elements, and that's unique. You have to see if this is true, and that's why it is the quintessential chayk of all the mitzvahs. All right, there's more to this. We're out of time. Let's go. We're going to go to another. Let's go to another idea. Let's enough said. Let's go to another idea. We'll discuss later on privately. Let's go to another idea. Parshas Chukas. I really believe if you have to go to Parshas Chukas on the way out of shul, they should line up the whole street with psychologists and psychiatrists. And all helpers, we need a massive to deploy every psychiatrist, psychologist, crisis manager outside every Beis HaKnesses after we read Parshas Chukas. Let me very simple why. The whole parsha from beginning to end is all about death. Beginning to end is death. I'll show you. The first two aliyos, straight. Zois chukas ha-toira. Take for yourself a para aduma to deal with the dead. A person has died. A person dies. He's avi avois ha-toma. Zois ha-toira adam ki yomus be'oyel. Dead avi avois. The house is Tamei, the people are Tamei, the food is Tamei. There are six levels of Tumah. Avi Avois, Av, Rishai, Sheni, Chumah is a Shlishi, Kachem is a Revi. Six levels of Tumah that result from death. The whole world, everything is contaminated. You need a psychologist just to deal with all the laws of Tumah v'Tahara, to go through the Masech v'Taharas, to deal with all these halachas. Death, right? Isn't that the first 12 years? Adam Kiyam Asbar. Okay. You think you're safe? You think you're safe? You can come out of the hole? No. After we have the two aliyas, we're in the middle of the second aliyas, we learn about the death of Miriam. More death. Vayavo v'nei Yisrael kol ho'eda b'mir atzin b'chodesh ha'rishon v'yesh ha'am b'kodesh. That's it. Vatomas Sham Mirya. You thought you finished with death? A new parsha. The death of Mirya. And the consequence? The Be'er dried up. It was only in the Zuchus of Miriam for 40 years the Jewish people had water. Moshe was the Mon, Aaron was the Anani HaKavod, Miriam was the Be'er. She died. And what happened? There's no water. V'lo hoya mayim lo eda. There was no water. They complained to Moshe, what are we going to do? They said, V'lu gavanu b'gva achein lefnei ha-halavai. We died already. We can't deal with this, with starvation. Dehydration. What did he do to us? He took us out of Eretz Mitzrayim. He didn't bring us anywhere. Death. Miriam wasn't just an ordinary person. She was the mother of Klal Yisrael. You know, she was the mother. She was the senior mother of Klal Yisrael. First lady of Klal Yisrael. That's what she was. And she died. So is this not tragic? Is this not tragic? Okay, next. Third Aliyah. What's next? There's no water. So Hashem, Moshe, hit the rock. Speak to the rock. Talk to the rock. What does Moshe do? Hits the rock. Moshe, you made a big mistake. You're going to die. You made a big mistake. You're going to die. You're not going into Eretz Yisrael. That's what Hashem says. You were meant to go into Eretz Yisrael. You're going to die prematurely. More death. You think you finished? Next Aliyah. Vayishlach Moshe Mikodesh, next parish, Mikodesh Malachim, Mikodesh Olmelech Edoim. We want to go through your land. We want to pass through your land. And what does he say to Klal Yisrael? Don't you dare, I'll kill you all. The threat of death. Vayom Elov Edoim, Loi Savor Bi Pen. I'll kill you all. I'll kill you. You dare come in my land, you're all going to be dead. The threat of death. That's even worse than death itself. Okay? The threat that death lingers over your head. More death. Okay? We need psychologists for this? We certainly do. We're not even finished yet. And what's the next aliyah? Chamishi. They travel a little further. And right away Hashem says, Vayomer Hashem Moshev Yel Aaron Behor Hor Al Gvul Eretz Edom Lemar. The time has come for Aaron to die. And let's do this. Let's do this. Go to Hor HaHor, bring up Eliezer, and Aaron's going to lie down in the cavern. He's going to die. And Eliezer is going to take over, and you're going to administer his patira. Yosef Aharon El Amov Ki Lo Yovo Yel Aretz Asher Nosati Livnei Yisrael. Okay, the whole parsh, Aaron dies. Aaron dies. Okay, are we finished yet? Not finished. Next parsha. Vayishma ha-Kenani melech Arot. This is Milchames Amalek. Chazal said the Kenani he was like Amalek in disguise. And what happens? Kivo Yisrael derech ha-Asorim vayilochem bi-Yisrael. They take a captive, a shifcha. What is the response? War. And what do they do in the war? They kill everyone. Sometimes the stress, soldiers who are in battle, who kill other people, it haunts them the rest of their life. Dealing with killing other people, even wicked Rishoyim, it haunts a person. How can I live with myself knowing that I have killed this person? Did he deserve to die? Just because it was battle, did I have to go kill him? Maybe I could have slowed him down. I could have shot him in the leg. I had to kill him. So what did they do? They made a neder. If you let us be successful, we'll donate all the spoils of war to Hashem. So Vayishma Hashem, we call the Shabbayiti Desakan Vayacharem Esenvias Orehem. It says that they promise Vehacharamti Es Orehem. And what does Rashi say? Vehacharamti Es Orehem. Pasik Beis says, we're going to kill them all. Let me find the Pasik. Derecho Asorim. Pasik Gimel. Vayacharam Eshem. Behariga, explicit in Rashi. What did they do in this Mulchama? They killed all of these people. All of the people that started up with them, they went to war, they were Amalekim, they wiped them out. Don't you think this post-traumatic stress disorder from such an event? It certainly is. Death, death, death. Okay, what's next? You think we're finished with death? No, we're not. Next parasha. Next parasha, they come into the desert. They complain about the man. The food is no good. We don't like the menu. The menu just does not, it's not up to snuff. It's not five-star restaurant. So what happens? Vayishlach Hashem ba'am eis hanechoshim hasarofim vayinashichu esa'am vayomos am rov miYisrael. Many people died. They complained that the food is not good enough to eat. There was a magefa. They died. Men am rov. It's a very powerful statement. More death. Moshe makes the nechash and the choshes. You look at the nechash and the tshuva. They stop dying. You think we're finished? We're not finished yet. They go. They start traveling. Misham nasah. And Rashi over here tells us the amazing stream of blood flowing down. The next parish they travel. Misham nasah. Vayachnu benachal zored. Misham nasahu. Vayachnu, they travel, and it says over here, on the long, long Rashi is describing in this section, this next section, that as they're traveling in the desert, in these masos, they see this amazing stream of blood flowing down. Now, can you imagine what that means? You see blood, a stream of blood, a river of blood. What's going on? So Rashi says, because the enemy decided they were going to ambush the Jewish people, they found the perfect place to lie in ambush, in between two mountains. And they were waiting to chop the Jews and wipe out the whole cloud of Israel. And Hashem did for them the ultimate miracle. He caused the two mountains to crash into each other, squeeze them out, these people, this massive group of people, and the blood of all of the slain, the people that were killed, their blood flowed down as a river. And Klal Yisrael, they see this blood. It's a scary thing to see blood, to see the death of many people, and realize that it really should have been their blood that should have been flowing like a river. And Hashem did the miracle, and Hashem killed all of these people. Okay, so how many stories of death have we already come across? Non-stop death. And then what's so bizarre is, we come to the point of the Torah, which in the eyes of many of the Farshim is the highest point in the whole Torah. Beligus, not Har Sinai, not Yitzias Mitzrayim. The Spitz is this week's parasha. Oz Yoshir Yisrael Es Hashira Hazos. They sang the ultimate Shira. They're called here Yisrael, the most beautiful title for Klal Yisrael. Ali ve'er enula. Ve'er, a well, they have water. Al derech pshat, they have water. They thank Hashem. Ve'er chaforua sorim. Korua, it's been hewn by princes. Korua nidive ha'am b'mchokeg b'mishan. By the lawgiver with his staff. Umi midbar matana. Every word of this shira requires pages and pages of explanation to understand what the Shir is about. But Chazal, we're not going to go through now. Rashi explains a little bit, look at all the Mefarshim. Chazal, they look at this Shira, and they ascribe to this Shira the loftiest thoughts in Klal Yisrael. The greatest expression of thanks. Here they're about to leave the Midbar. They're on the brink of entering into Eretz Yisrael. They're reminiscing their history, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They're reminiscing what happened in Mitzrayim. 40 years of survival in a place that is impossible. They're reminiscing, and they give Shira to Hashem. That's the Derech Pshat. But isn't it bizarre that this is juxtaposed against a long series of stories that deal with every possible angle of death you can come up with? The death of a mother, the death of a spiritual leader, the death of a king. Moshe was the king, the Moshe of a king, the Melech. What? Aaron was a Kohen Gadol. That was a spiritual leader to a degree. Moshe Rabbeinu was like the Melech. The death of all different times. The threat of death, killing someone else. People, your own relatives dying because of doing all right. Every angle of death that you can imagine is something you have to deal with in this world. All different types of different types of elements of dealing with death, killing people, your friends being killed, a person, an individual, every possible angle of death, which is something which is the most painful, the most horrible thing, is juxtaposed next to the Shira, in which Chazal's eyes is the ultimate shirim of the Torah. It's called a shira. Oz Yoshir, it's separated by a parsha, stuma parsha, psuchos, its own parsha. That's the end of all of the stories of it. My eye, what's going on over here? What in the world is going on here? So I want to suggest it's deliberate. The reason why this shira is put here is because this indeed is the greatness of Klal Yisrael. The nisoyon of being able to sing shira after going through a gate salmodes and to sing shira is not real. People who came out of the Holocaust, how many of them could live normal lives with emunah? Anyone that did is mamish a malach elokim tzavachas. To come out of the horrors, the horrors of what they saw, what they had, what they lost, and to be a healthy mind, it's not to be believed. And Rahman said, you know, how many people were lost? How many people who came out of the Holocaust? You can't have any timeless on them. Who could say anything to them? Klal Yisrael witnessed here death in every single angle. And yet, were able to pull themselves together and say Shira. And if you look very closely at the words, I want to suggest, every single one of these very interesting words really corresponds very well to the 7-8 ideas that we've just mentioned, that we've gone through in the parasha. This Shira is a summary of death. Oz Yoshir Yisrael, Es Ashira Hazos, Ali Ve'er, Enu Lo. What's the law? Why is the law? Law is Lashon's feminine. And who's the Be'er? The Be'er, and whose chus did Klal Yisrael merit the Be'er? Miriam, the first exception, and new law, give Shira to Hashem law. I mean, I'm saying Ramazan, you have to work out the details on your own later on. I didn't work out details 100%, but obviously, the Be'er and law, besides the Peshuta Shel Mikra, is a reference to Miriam. It was in the zechus of Miriam, Hashem taught Klal Yisrael first, there's a parsha of Tumah. Adam ki yamos b'ayel. There's a parasha, the person dies, there's tuma, avi avos tuma, and the avi avos tuma demands that we have to do a paraduma. And then the first thing is the death of Miriam. The death of Miriam is the first example of the tsar of death. I mean, we go together. Then we come to be'er chafarua sorim korua nidive ha'am. We can suggest that this refers to Aaron HaKoyen, because Aaron, it's not going to be perfectly in order, but Aaron HaKoyen was the Tsar of Klal Yisrael. He was from the people who have given up. They don't, the Shevet Levi, they do not, the spiritual leaders, they do not have any chelik in Eretz Yisrael. They are the ultimate Nedive Ha'am, the people who have given up of their lives in order to serve Hashem by teaching, by serving Klal Yisrael. What greater Nidive Am are there? And we've just focused on the death of Aaron. Who else do we focus on? The lawgiver, Moshe Rabbeinu. Bim Choykeik, the lawgiver, Bim Mish'anoi Sam with his stick. Moshe Rabbeinu with his stick, he hit the rock. Instead of speak to the rock, what was the consequence? He's going to die. Umi Midbar, Matana. What happened in the Midbar? Hashem gave Klal Yisrael the ultimate matana in the Midbar. What was the matana? Yeah. The man. And what did Klal Yisrael say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Nafshenu kotza balechem akilokel hazeh. And what was the result of that statement of denying the matana of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Vayomos shom am rav. The plague. Many people died. So that's not a direct reference to the Midbar, the matana of the Midbar. And then we describe the entire journey And what happened? That refers to the stay mayav, refers to the journeys when we pass through these different places where we came in contact with Edom. Go back and trace these locations. We came near Edom and we said, Edom, let us travel through your land. No. You come near us, I'll kill you. We went the next journey, we traveled to the Canaan, came out against us. Amalek, we killed them. And then we came to the last place, Rosh HaPiska, HaNishkaf, HaPnei HaYeshimon, where we witnessed the flow of blood, a torrent of blood coming down that was meant to be our blood, but Hashem